stock looking good this morning. Silver Group. She's worked my time taking my computer off.
Good morning. We're going to call the meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors to order. Today is March 4th, 2010. It's 8:30 a.m. We're in the Community Center Sierra Room in Carson City, Nevada. Could we please have a roll call, Alan?
Supervisor Williamson.
Here.
Supervisor Aldean.
Here.
Supervisor Livermore.
Here.
Supervisor Walt.
Here.
Mayor Kroll.
Here.
You have a quorum present, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Dave Goodale here? Dave, good morning. Would you lead us in the thought and the invocation for the day, please?
Let us pray. Father, we thank you for this day and for the opportunity to serve the people of such a great city. Give divine wisdom and guidance to our city leaders as they seek the best solutions that will bring prosperity and peace. May the decisions and changes they set in motion today secure a good future for tomorrow, a future that is full of hope and security. Grant these things in your name. Amen.
Dave, thank you again while we're on tape. Thank you for coming and getting us started off on the right foot. It's always a pleasure. And so give our best to your congregation out there. All right. Thank you. All right. We'll now move on to the minutes. Boy, we got a bunch here. March 6th, February 4th, and February 16th. Everybody had a chance to look at them?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I have some comments on the minutes of February 4th, 2010.
Okay.
On page 7, second line in paragraph 3, it says, in response to a question, Mr. Burnham advised that the Roop Street widening project phase 2 is the principal. I think principal needs to be P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L.
Okay.
Is the principal project. and then on page 9, last paragraph, in response to a question regarding the projects to be funded, Mr. Burnham explained that the, I think it should read that the Carson City, that Carson City's share of the Douglas County Intertie project is included in the $32 million. And that's it.
Okay. Kathy, did you get those?
Should we do these individually? You want to do
Yeah, let's do them.
We'll do this one individually.
Okay. let's do, everybody had a chance to look at March 6, 2009. Motions in order on March 6, 2009.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes from the Special Strategic Planning meeting of March 6, 2009 as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Public discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're on now on February 4th minutes.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Supervisors dated February 4th, 2010 as amended.
Second. Motion second. Discussion. Public discussion. Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
February 16th, 2010 minutes.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes of February 16th, 2010 of the Carson City Board of Supervisors as presented.
Second. Motion second by Supervisor Livermore. All in favor. Discussion. Hearing none or seeing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Okay. We're now on item 6 of the agenda. Anybody want to change anything around on the agenda? Anybody want to take anything off?
Anyone want to adjourn?
Anyone want to adjourn?
We have no consent agenda today.
No consent agenda today. We're going to be, okay. We're going to use the agenda as published then. Now is the time for public discussion and comments. And I have been asked, as the notes say, if a member of the public desires to have extended comment under public comment to ask us, and we will make time. And so I was asked by Mr. Fred Kessler of Anchorage Construction to have some time on the public comment agenda to talk about the windmill ordinance that we discussed last year. And so I think Mr. Kessler is here, and I believe he has his counsel with him, Mr. Jim Beasley. Morning, Jim.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You want to go ahead and...
Good morning,
members. I'm Bob, so that's okay.
Okay. My name is Jim Beasley, and I'm an attorney up in Reno, Nevada. I've dropped off in front of you a five-page document, I believe, and it sets forth Senate Bill 144, particularly Section 2.5, having to do with wind ordinances, and also the last three pages have to do with the Carson City Ordinance. My purpose in coming here today is to try and point out to the members of this board that there are portions of the Carson City Ordinance which are, in fact, in conflict with the Nevada statute and, as a result, are unenforceable. The particular provision that I want the board to focus upon is set out on page 4 of your little pamphlet, and it's contained in the section. It's on page 125 of 171, and it's in the section entitled Standards, and it's subparagraph B, where it says a maximum of one wind machine per acre is permitted on parcels greater than 1 acre in size. You have a 2 acre parcel, you can put one wind turbine on it. If you have a 10-acre parcel, you can put one wind turbine on it. This is in direct conflict with the provisions of Senate Bill 144. And if you would look at pages 1 and 2 of the little handout, you will see in subparagraph 2 below the section 2.5, it says the provisions of subsection 1 do not prohibit a reasonable restriction or requirement, and then going to the next page, imposed pursuant to a determination by the Federal Aviation Administration, etc. I'm not really concerned with that provision. And the second provision is one that says, relating to the height, noise, or safety of a system for obtaining wind energy. In other words, there's three specific exceptions. Okay, if a city ordinance is directed to regulation of the height, noise, or safety of the system, okay, then it's possible that a limitation could be placed upon a system which is, let's say, unreasonably restricted. However, in this particular case, if you go look at the Carson City Ordinance, it was enacted on July 2nd, 2009. The state version, Senate Bill 144 was enacted on May 2nd of the same year. It's apparent from reading the sections that probably the Carson City Ordinance was in fact prepared prior to the adoption of the state statute, because it incorporates certain measures which are in conflict with the state statute. The one that I'm particularly interested in is this one here. Subparagraph B, where it talks about only one wind turbine per parcel, okay, is in no way related to the requirement or the regulation affecting the noise. It is in no way related to the regulation affecting the height of a wind turbine. The only argument that Carson City could make is that somehow it's related to a safety concern. That is, we're only going to put one wind turbine on a parcel because, let's say, it might pose a danger to somebody. However, the language of the Carson City Ordinance itself shows that this is not the case. If you will look at the Carson City Ordinance and the paragraph directly above, which is on page 125 of 171, in subparagraph A, it says a minimum parcel size of 1 acre is required for the placement of any horizontal axial wind turbine. Okay, my discussion here is not directed to a horizontal axial wind turbine. It's directed to a vertical axial wind turbine. And that's addressed in the very next sentence. It says vertical axial wind turbines are permitted on any parcel. There's no limitation. In other words, if you have, I have a photocopy blown up of, let's say, a block in Carson City, which is parceled out by my approach. And under this specific Carson City ordinance, okay, and let's say block 112, there's 12 lots. Okay, and if I divide, and let's say all together, it comprises 2.15 acres. If I just take this half, the south half of this particular lot, where I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lots, okay, the Carson City ordinance allows, let's say, the manufacturer or developer of a vertical axial wind turbine to put one wind turbine on each of these lots, one on lot 13, 7, 8, 9, 11, 12. Okay, and there's no concerns with safety. Okay, however, if you have somebody who just owns a parcel of this size, approximately 1 acre to 1.9 acres, okay, the Carson City ordinance says, hey, that owner could only put one wind turbine, one vertical axial wind turbine on that particular lot. And it doesn't make sense. But what it does show you is that in this connection, the requirement imposed by the Carson City ordinance as far as one wind turbine per acre, okay, is not directed to a safety issue. Because if it was directed to a safety issue, okay, then under the Carson City ordinance, a developer would not be able to install wind turbines on each of these six blocks. And so the basic thing that I'm saying is that this particular statute, which is set out in Senate Bill 114, imposes certain requirements. It says that a city ordinance can impose a reasonable restriction or requirement, and the only reasonable restrictions or requirements are those relating to height, noise, or safety of a system. If you look at the Carson City ordinance, the Carson City ordinance does address those issues. As far as safety is concerned, it talks about setbacks. It talks about access. It provides for provisions having to do with rotor safety. It also addresses the issue of noise. It also addresses the issue of height. Okay, there's no problem with those specific provisions. Where the problem lies is that it attempts to address the issue of location. And the only basis upon which it could conceivably do so is not on the basis of noise, not on the basis of height, possibly safety, but the fact that you can set up a turbine, a vertical axial turbine, on any size parcel. For instance, in the example that I gave you, and in a parcel 1 to 2 acres, you could put up 6 wind turbines, shows that it's not a safety concern that the Carson City ordinance is directed to, where it says that you can only put up one wind turbine per acre. And that's the only thing that I wanted to talk about. Thank you.
I appreciate that very much. Fred, do you want to add anything?
Yes, I provided my presentation comments to the board. Jim went over a lot of it. There's also the issue.
Fred, can we get your name for the record, please?
Fred Kessler. The second issue is the color restrictions. Aside from the obvious freedom of expression constitutional issues inherent in restricting colors, the applicable statutes provide no authority whatsoever for a governing body to regulate the appearance of a wind turbine. You may only regulate the height, noise, or safety of a system for obtaining wind energy, nothing more. Our third issue is the restrictions upon wind turbines in a historical district. There is no authorization within the applicable statutes for a governing body to impose such a restriction. They only allow for the regulation of the height, noise, or safety of a system for obtaining wind energy, nothing more. The current restrictions in your ordinance if a property owner or if a tenant, let's say a commercial tenant, wants to put up multiple wind turbines on their facility and they are restricted from doing so, you're giving them cause of action against Carson City for the loss, for the value of the lost power that they cannot generate as a result of the ordinance, which conflicts with state law. So I think what we're asking is that, number one, you rescind the existing wind ordinance as soon as possible to avoid having, you know, to litigate any challenges to it, to formulate a new ordinance that is in strict compliance with the applicable statutes and stays within the prescribed limits for governing bodies. Three, eliminate the obvious NIMBY provisions from the new ordinance that unreasonably restrict wind generating systems. Four, future-proof the ordinance to accommodate new and not yet invented wind generating technologies that will invariably appear over time. I mean, it's conceivable that somebody will come up with a pinwheel about this high and you put, you know, 100 of them around your roof and it powers your building. I mean, that may happen. We don't know. And so whatever comes down the pike, your ordinance has to be set up so that it can handle new technologies, and they're coming out every day. One of the other issues is that hybrid and all-electric vehicles will become prevalent in time. Currently, San Francisco has changed their building codes so that they now require you put plug-ins, you know, receptacles for plug-in vehicles. What San Francisco also realizes is that there is nowhere near the amount of power in the grid to power all those vehicles. So renewable energy in the Bay Area is going to be a very big thing, and that same phenomenon will hit Carson City sooner or later. If everybody starts plugging their vehicles in, your vehicle takes six times as much power as you currently use in your house. So this is going to – it will happen. I mean, this is a good reason for Carson City to actively support this, you know, aside from the fact that it's state policy. You know, everybody agrees renewable energy is the future of Nevada, and Carson City is as good a place to start as any. Thank you. And there's photos in the packet I gave you, and it shows you what we got. One, two, three. You know, we got six here. You know, 10, 15 feet apart, whatever, on a building. We don't need an acre per wind spire, and if you have to spread them out like that, they become non-cost effective because you have to dig trenches all over the place, run conduits all over the place. The closer we can group them together, the more cost effective they are.
Okay.
Thank you. And also I have Dennis Montgomery here, who's an engineer from Royal Power. If you have any questions about sound, noise, or safety, you know, structural integrity, Dennis can answer all of that.
Okay. Well, I think to both Mr. Kessler and Mr. Beasley, we've had quite a bit of discussion on this issue last year. That's not to say that further discussion should ever be foreclosed. But what I'd like to do is ask the district attorney to, if they understand what you're saying, and then we'll see what they have to say about the comments and see if we can take it from there. I mean, is that all right with the board or not?
As long as we're provided with the documentation, we haven't received anything as of today's date that I'm aware of. So they can certainly call our office, give us this information, talk to us, and we can provide a memo to the board.
Okay. Good. All right. Okay. Jim, grab the plat map up here, too, if you want. Right there. Thanks. Okay, guys. And thanks for being accommodating of the time. It was well organized, so thank you. Okay, other members of the public desire to raise any issue that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none. Okay, we'll now then move to item number 8A, finance ordinances. We'll have Mr. Providenti, you going to do this one?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Nick Providenti, Carson City Finance Director. The first item, we're asking you to adopt a resolution of intent proposing the issuance of and authorizing the publication of notices relating to general obligation limited tax bonds additionally secured by pledged revenues for the purpose of financing water projects for the city. Basically, this is kind of the next step in the bond issuance process. If you recall, on February 4th, the board passed a resolution asking the Debt Management Commission to approve the 2010 Carson City Water Bond Approval Resolution. This was actually passed by the Debt Management Commission at their February 22nd meeting. The resolution that we're asking you to set to pass today basically sets forth two notices to be published, one which starts the 90-day petition period and one noticing a public hearing. If during the 90-day petition period the city receives a petition signed by 5% of the registered voters, then the city would need to put a question on the ballot in order to use the general obligation backing for these bonds. If we did receive a petition, we could still go forward and issue revenue bonds with just the revenue pledge, which would, of course, cost more money. So basically, that's really all I had to offer on this. It's just the next step in the process of issuing these bonds.
Questions of Mr. Providenti? Members of the public desire to speak to this issue before we discuss up here? Mr. Wagner, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and supervisors. For the record, my name is John Wagner, and I'm a resident of Carson City. I know this is being pushed because the federal government says we must do this. And I resent that very, very much. Number one, I have in my hand the Constitution of the United States. It's not very big. And I'm sure the bill that you got proposed is probably takes more pages than this. Now, why, I'm keep questioning, what gives the federal government the authority to mandate that we do certain things? Are they in the business of mandating water, a mandating sewer? Pretty soon to be mandating the air we breathe and putting meters on us. I don't believe that we should, you know, necessarily just go along with everything they do. And I think it would be a very gutsy move, if I may use that term, for you to tell the federal government to stuff it. Where does it say they can do this? I know they say, well, if you ask them about it, they'll say, are you serious? Well, I am serious. Where does it say it? I got two lawyers that I can see, and I'll gladly give you the book to show me where it says they can do this. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay, go ahead, Supervisor Williamson. Go ahead.
John, just very quickly respond. It's not really, I mean, the Constitution says law, Congress has the ability to enact laws, and this is one of the Clean Water Act laws. But let me just kind of put this in context for everyone. What we're doing is issuing bonds for a project that allows us to have an intertie with Douglas County for their water, and we're doing that to able to meet our water quality standards, which are enacted by the federal government. And we don't meet currently. And we're doing this project. It meets our water quality standards in lieu of building a treatment facility that's much more expensive to construct and operate on a long-term basis. Plus, it has additional benefits in terms of additional water capacity during the summertime and fire flows in terms of if either Douglas County or Carson City has you know, fire or a need for additional water. So I think, overall, despite the it isn't something that's directly being ordered by the Congress for us to do, there's legislation that sets water quality standards, and this is our effort to meet those standards in addition to having other benefits.
I agree that Congress has the ability to make laws, but they're supposed to make laws in reference to the Constitution. The Constitution says what Congress can do and what they cannot do. In fact, in Bill of Rights, if you look at the first part of the Bill of Rights, it mostly says Congress shall not, Congress shall not, Congress shall not. But Congress does it anyway, and they just ignore it, and nobody anywhere says anything against it. Sooner or later, I expect somebody to say, hey, enough is enough, and we're not going to do this anymore. So.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
I guess the underlying issue is, you know, when I hear these arguments, and I appreciate the argument. What I come back to internally is whether or not there's a safety risk involved with meeting the standards or not. And so, in one sense, I understand what you're saying, that you don't want somebody else telling you what to do. And on the other sense, if there is a safety issue, I kind of want to know that as well, because that's where I come down on these things. But independent of that, I appreciate your comments, and I think Supervisor Aldean has a comment or question, too.
Well, I think, John, we all share your frustration. We all want to be as autonomous as we possibly can and make decisions for the people that we report to directly. It's important to note that of the $32 million, $10 million is for the acquisition of additional water rights in Minden. And these water rights, this water is arsenic-free. And as the mayor indicates, although, you know, people have been drinking the water in the Eagle Valley for many, many years, I don't think with any negative health impacts, there is a possibility that increased arsenic, increased uranium could ultimately lead to health implications, and then we would be liable. But I do want you to understand that, you know, $6 million is for the intertie with Douglas County, $10 million is for the additional water rights, and the balance of the $16 million is for improving our infrastructure within the city itself so that we can deliver water more efficiently.
Congress, or the standards that are set can be raised at any time, and then suddenly now what do? We go through this whole process all over again. They make these standards so rigid. You know, no one's died from any of this stuff that I can remember, and they keep making their standards higher and higher and higher and harder to meet. And, of course, the harder they make it to meet, the more money you have to spend to make it work. So I don't know when it's going to stop, probably never.
I got John. You're very articulate. Supervisor Livermore has it.
Well, John, as we've spoken the last week, the issue besides public safety and public health is, I think my two colleagues to the right over here that discussed with you, it's a matter of also supply and demand. As our community continues to grow, the need for water resources or our charge to acquire and to be able to deliver that. It's not a, you know, who got here first, and when we run out of water, we quit the building. There are a huge amount of parcels still yet to be built in Carson City, and developers are looking for those water resources. Along with the uranium and the arsenic issue, there's a matter of supply and demand and standby and whatever else we need. The most difficult time I have serving this board is when the utility department puts a no water restriction over a weekend or over a period of time, get a huge amount of complaints over that. And this is an effort to stabilize the supply and demand side of this. And whenever you do this, it does take resources to be able to acquire the water rights, because we just can't acquisition them, which might deliver them to us. So that means we have to pay fair market value for those. And once we buy them, they're not here on our doorsteps. We also have to figure a way to get it delivered to us. And this is what the whole concept of this regional system is. And that's probably not laws given to us by the Constitution or by Congress. That's a matter of supply and demand as we sit here and try to manage the city's ability to allow for a prosperous community that allows everyone to have equal opportunity to build on that parcel of ground that they see fit to do.
I appreciate that, Supervisor Livermore. And maybe this should be broken up into several different bills, because I don't know whether you're under the single rule, you know, single item as the legislature is, which they don't follow either. But, you know, part of it I agree with. We do need water, and I understand the agreement with Douglas County, and I think that's all well and good. It's the idea of having to build all these other facilities because the federal government says we have to is what I object to.
I got you.
Thank you.
Keep your eye on the home rule argument in the legislature this next session, too. And
I'll be there.
Good. Okay.
I'll be there lobbying again. I'll probably see you there, too, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Very good. Okay. All right. Any further comments from the public on this issue? Okay.
Resolution number is 2010-R9.
Okay. Discussion on this? Any board discussion? Okay. Motion to order if we want to take it up, and then we'll see where we go.
I'll make the motion.
All right.
I move to adopt resolution number 2010-R9, a resolution of intent proposing the issuance of and authorizing the publication of notices relating to general obligation limited tax bonds additionally secured by pledged revenues for the purpose of financing water projects for the city, providing the manner, form, and contents of the notice, authorizing the city manager or city finance director to arrange for the sale of the bonds, providing other matters properly related thereto, and providing for the effective date hereof. And the fiscal impact in the water fund estimate is $60,402,239, includes principal and interest.
Second.
Motion second by Supervisor Walt. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, carried, unanimous. Okay, thank you very much. We'll now move to item 8B.
Again, Nick Providenti, Finance Director. This is basically a similar resolution, just kind of on the sewer side. Again, on February 4th, the board passed a resolution asking the Debt Management Commission to approve the 2010 Carson City Sewer Bond Approval Resolution, which they passed on February 22nd. And, you know, this resolution, again, starts the 90-day petition period and the notice of public hearing. So,
okay.
Very similar, just on the sewer side.
Bill on the sewer side of things. Members of the public, do you want your comments, John, to be reiterated in this item, or you want to? Okay. We'll just make the record will reflect that if called, that your comments would be similar to what they were on the prior agenda item. Okay. Any other members of the public desire to speak to this issue? Hearing none, board comments or questions? Motion's in order.
Mr. Mayor, I move to adopt resolution number 2010-R10, a resolution of intent proposing the issuance of and authorizing the publication of notices related to general obligation, limited tax bonds additionally secured by pledged revenues for the purpose of financing sewer projects for the city, providing the manner, form, and contents of the notice, authorizing the city manager or city finance director to arrange for the sale of the bonds, providing other matters properly related thereto, and providing the effective date hereof.
Second.
Motion, second by Supervisor Livermore. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, carried, unanimous. Okay. Now moving on to item 8C, discussion of the allowed property tax rate under the 2011 budget. You bet. Sure. I'm sorry.
Either Larry or Ken, or something. Could you give us an idea of in issuing these bonds, how many construction jobs will we be creating?
I think when we talk to you, Andy, he does some evaluation. It's almost 1,500, I think, by the time you look at the secondary impacts of the direct construction, the secondary impacts, and the as it filters down into the local services.
And that's going to be, if we issue these bonds and go forward, the construction would start when?
I think portions of it are actually not being paid for by the bond, but being paid for out of our other funds that started with the project that's going down Riverview Terrace or Fifth Street. So I think this design work is underway. I think they're looking at completion of design of a major portion of this project in November and probably bidding it next fall and then construction that spring or summer at that point, Robin, is what I think.
Okay. 8C, Mr. Providenti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record again, Nick Providenti. What we're asking you on this board action item is basically for you guys to direct us in establishing the property tax rate for use in preparing the Carson City's 2011 budget. We're recommending again to use the allowed tax rate as compiled by the Department of Taxation. This rate would basically generate, we're estimating, about probably $375,000 in additional revenues to the general fund. And we've provided you, you know, what that rate would be. I think it would go from, we're basically levying, without the Carson Valley Groundwater Basin, $3.1279. And that rate would go to 3.4434 cents. And, you know, we'd be happy, Larry and I'd be happy to answer questions. I know the assessor's here, and they've prepared kind of a list of affected parcels. And, you know, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, here's the question I'd like, and I suspect we're going to have some discussion on this issue. The question I'd like to start off with, from my perspective, is, you know, normally when we talk about raising the allowed rate, you're really not affecting anybody because there's a tax cap in place. You may be affecting new construction, and we talked about that last time. But nowhere near the impact of what we're dealing with here, the potential impact we're dealing with here. And so, you know, what I'd like to have answered is, you know, theoretically, what I think what's happening here is that the reason there is a tax impact greater this time than there was, say, last year,
is because the value of properties has declined below the cap that would otherwise that's in place. I'd like to know if that's what's happening here, because and second, if that is what's going on, I'd like to know the justification for, or the theory or rationale for why, if that is indeed what's going on, what's the rationale for putting an increase in the tax load, the dollar tax load, on parcels of property that have theoretically declined in value more than others? And that's what I think we're getting at here. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're right. What this would do, if you stayed at the same tax rate and with the property values going down, they wouldn't see the 3% cap. So with the new tax rate, you'd actually bring those properties up to the 3% cap that they would see under normal circumstances.
And as far as commercial is concerned, it would be the greater amount, probably the 8% cap. Right?
And any new construction would see that, or any new addition.
But is the reason for that, though, is one of the reasons for that the actual value of the property that we're talking about, the affected parcels, has declined
more than
others?
Right, that's correct. The I guess, and Dave can answer that too, is the assessor, but the assessed value has dropped to the point, so then when you look at the current tax rate applied against the 3% cap, it doesn't get there, right? That's kind of my understanding of how this works. So this would then fill that gap between what we would get with the declining property value and the 3% of the existing rate with the new rate would take us to the full 3% cap.
Yeah, well, Dave, I'd be happy to have you clear this up, and I think you probably should, but I guess, you know, philosophically what I'd like to have discussed, and for me anyway, is it seems like if we do this today, that what we're doing is we're placing the tax burden on properties that have declined in value greater in relatively than other properties in our community. And I want to know, you know, internally and intellectually, I want to know what the rationale for that would be. And I understand the need for revenue, and I got that. I mean, I understand exactly where that's coming from, believe me. But that's what I'm struggling with internally here myself. So,
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Dave Dolly Carson, City Assessor. What we're finding when we did this, when we prepared a list for Mr. Werner yesterday, there's about 700 parcels that are actually going to be affected by this. There's not one area that's actually receiving more or lower values than the rest of Carson City. What's happening is the majority of these properties were not in existence as of 2005. So whether they were subdivided after that, whether they were built after that, they were added to the roll outside of the cap. So they went on at a higher value. And so they were taxed at the higher value. And so now that the values are falling, their actual tax amount that they would be paying is falling. And so it's that difference. I can give you an example. There's a house over there off of Rob Drive. And this year, the taxes were about $5,600. If the tax rate was to remain the same for next year, the taxes would fall to $4,900. If you increase the tax rate, then next year's taxes would now be $5,400. So they would still get a decrease, but they wouldn't see the same decrease that they would see if the tax rate was to remain the same. And that happens, it's on new construction primarily, a lot of developments, raw land, when it's subdivided to the very final point, goes on the roll at full value. Those are the parcels that are being affected. Does that make sense?
That does, and I think, you know, we'll get this fleshed out a little bit more. I think we got some lights up here, so I'm going to go to Supervisor Livermore, then Supervisor Walt, then go around, because the lights are blinking up pretty good up here.
Well, Dave, on your relationship to the Rob Drive property, because the assessed value dropped, that means the price of the parcel dropped, the sellable price of that parcel dropped.
Correct.
So why do you find it an equitable position to apply a higher tax rate to that than the adjacent property? If it's all relevant to the value of a piece of parcel that is sold, no matter when it came aboard, as you described it, in 2005 at a different value because it was outside of the cap, where is the equability of your parcel, my parcel? We live next door, Rob Drive. because my house was built in 05, and if you would place that in the market and the realtor would offer that for sale, our price would be pretty similar, but we'd have a different tax structure.
That's correct. That's correct. Unfortunately, that is the law. What's happened twice now since 2005, the Board of Supervisors has raised the tax rate. When the cap was in place, or when it was put into place in 2005, the tax rate was $2.64 per hundred. Then it jumped up to $2.92 per hundred. Now it's at $3.12 per hundred. You have two identical houses next door to each other. One was built when the tax rate was $2.92 per hundred. The other one was built when it was $3.12 per hundred. You're going to have higher taxes.
Yeah.
That's the inequity that the current
law. And unfortunate, we don't control the legislature about how they apply this or how the cap was created or what. But I find it, as a policymaker, of course, it's really difficult to justify why I should pay a higher tax than you do, only because my house was built 1 year later than yours. And that's what I'm dealing with. And the public deals with that because, you know, as long as we're all sharing the burden, let's share the burden equally. Let's not share or let's not I hide behind a cap and allow you to pay $500 more in your property taxes, which if you look at that amount, that might be a large amount of money in people's vision.
That's correct.
And that's my problem I have dealing with this. And so it's the justification of a shared and equal burden throughout the community.
And I've heard that many times, many times. Unfortunately, it was the Nevada legislature who put these laws into place, and they're the only ones who can change it.
I understand.
Supervisor Walt. And I think, Dave, it's okay if you just stay up here. I think if there are questions,
no,
I mean,
fine.
Because...
No, that's
fine. Dave, go ahead. I'm sorry,
Ms. Molly. That's all right. Really, though, Supervisor Livermore had a lot of the sentiments that I had to say after speaking with you yesterday. That was my concern is, you know, those who are outside of the cap and inside of the cap, how unequal it was, and we went over that yesterday with Rob Drive and then another property that I had received an email. And, you know, I guess my feeling is, you know, whether it be 700 residents or 700 properties or it be 15,000 properties, the city is having a revenue issue, and I don't know whether or not those 700 people, the revenue issue that we're having should ride on the shoulders of those property owners. And so, like I said, Mr. Livermore said everything that I had to say about, you know, the cap and how unequal it is.
If I might respond to that, because I did talk to Mrs. Walt yesterday, and the issue is when will the taxes themselves be paid? And I've also talked to the Builders Association many times on this. With the property taxes for the new properties that are outside, they're going to be hit now. If you add the proposed allowable tax rate, then everybody else will be paying that tax. It's just going to be spread out for a longer time period. They're going to be receiving their 3% and their 8% tax or cap for a much longer time period than if they were hit immediately, which is what the new construction or the new developments is going to be hit with.
Okay. Supervisor Aldean and Supervisor Williams.
There's basically just going to be more abatement, I think,
is
what Dave is saying, and it would just spread out that abatement over a longer period.
There's two components when you're talking about the abatement itself. You're talking about the assessed valuation. You're also talking about the tax rate. You raise the tax rate, your assessed valuation is going to go down. I mean, there's only the two entities. So the cap will remain the same, but one of them is going to either go up or down depending on what the other does.
Quick question, Dave. On my tax bill, the city's current operating rate is 1.4792. What's allowed is 1.2735. Why the difference?
You're a supervisor.
It's one of the perks.
Supervisor Aldean, I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't deal with the tax entities, so I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I was just curious because, and in fact, what's allowed in FY 2011, if we were to enact this increase, is greater than what's being currently levied, but...
You said yours is 1.4792?
Correct.
Yeah, the allowed rate would go to 1.7946.
And I believe...
Well, that's... But I'm just taking a look at city operating. So what you're doing is you're combining that with a makeup revenue, which I'm assuming cannot be added to next year's base. Is that only... Is it done on an annual basis, depending
on... That's correct. But but that is considered part of the operating rate.
Okay. So, and then the regional juvenile facility, could you expand on that?
That's the WNRIC facility.
Right.
That we levy the tax for.
Okay. And it's in need of additional revenues as well? Is that why we're thinking of adjusting the allowed rate?
I think that would be yes, would be the answer.
Well,
because the basically what they try to get at is they do a budget in February, I believe, and they tell us what the amount they need from Carson City is, and that amount went up a little bit. That's why that rate went up a little bit.
Okay, but just
and we don't necessarily collect all the money that we give to them because of the abatement. So I mean, it's kind of an estimated rate. This abatement really throws a wrench in trying to project property tax because it's really almost impossible to do. So this 5.83 cents would, I think they need about $527,000 to operate, and I don't know if that would generate that much. It would probably get fairly close. We just try to estimate that.
Okay, but just to reiterate, Nick, that the makeup revenue that we are proposing to implement cannot be added to next year's base. This is done on an annual basis based on an analysis that has done regarding the assessed value of property in Carson City.
Well, actually, it's based on the amount of money that's not generated through SCCRT. It's basically a makeup of the sales tax that we didn't get from the prior year.
Okay.
So it does change. It does change annually.
And Dave, thank you for sending this. I think every member of the board received the comparison on this Rob Drive property. The problem is that the perception is, you know, using the old method, the tax would be without the tax cap, the tax would be $5,400. Using the new method with the cap, but with a new tax rate, the tax would be identical. You know, it appears to be a way of circumventing the cap that was implemented by the legislature. And so I think at a philosophical level, people are having a difficult time with that.
Supervisor Aldean, well, the reason for that is because the assessed value.
Oh, I understand. No, I understand that.
And
I understand that.
They either look at the assessed valuation or the cap, and so whichever is highest is the one that they're going to use.
No, I understand that, but I think the public perception is that we are attempting to
circumvent
the cap.
Absolutely.
By increasing the tax rate. Okay, that's all for now. Thank you.
Supervisor Williamson.
Thank you very much. And I think this has been a very interesting discussion for me, and I thanks Dave to hanging in there, explaining it all to us. And we all know that there are inequities, not necessarily inequities, but no one gets the same tax bill, depending on where you live, depending on the age of your home. There's depreciation that's thrown in here also in addition to the cap and whether or not it's a rental property or an owner-occupied property. There's all sorts of different – so it's very common that if one property right next to you will have a different starting point and a different ending tax than your own property. That being said, if we don't enact this increase, will we see a decline in property taxes next year? Revenues, not – we know the assessed valuation is declining, but is that going to translate into a decline in the property taxes that we receive?
I do not believe so, because the majority of Carson City is still underneath that cap. We were very conservative. When the cap went into place, we were using 04-05 values, which means we were actually using 02-03 cost when we were figuring out the 04-05 values. And so then we also had the waterfall fire that year, and so we froze the values. And so we've been very conservative. So when the cap went into place, the values were very low. And so the majority of Carson City is still under the cap, and they still will receive their 3% and their 8% cap. However, you will not receive the full amount of it because there will be some properties that are declining.
Right, and also to that end, we were not levying the maximum allowed tax rate at that time. We were probably 10 cents below the allowed tax rate. So if the cap wouldn't have went into place, we could have increased our tax rate 2 or 3 cents and got that money if we wanted to. But when they capped it, we basically lost the ability to levy that 10 cents. So when they raised the tax rate in probably 06, I think they increased the tax rate. That just gave us more abatement, basically. So we're almost abating as much tax as we're generating. I mean, it's it's probably, we're probably abating 45% of the tax. So if we didn't have this tax cap and we levied this tax rate, we wouldn't know what to do with all the money that we had. So, I mean, we obviously wouldn't be levying the tax rate as high as that. We wouldn't need that much tax rate, but I mean, that's just kind of where, that's just the reality of where we're at.
Well, I don't want to belabor this, but obviously this is one of the ironies of enacting this tax cap, is that the communities who are fiscally conservative with respect to raising their tax rate were ultimately penalized.
Okay.
You know, and I understand that, and I'm certainly very sympathetic. I'm just a little concerned. I know that we're going to be hearing from the Builders Association. We're going to be revisiting the issue of the impacts on new construction. Obviously, we deferred doing that previously because of the chilling effect it would have on new construction, and that's another concern I have. I mean, we dramatically reduced the connection fees, and then we implement a tax rate increase, which is going to really nullify the benefits of reducing those connection fees.
No, there's no connection chilly.
Well, there is a connection
it's
fee.
It's about a $500 per year impact, and compared to abating thousands of dollars in sewer and water connection fees.
Well, I'm saying, though, Larry, on the one hand, we giveth, and the other hand, we taketh away. Philosophically, it's a philosophical aspect of this that I'm concerned
but,
with.
But dollar-wise, it's a huge
No, I understand that. Yeah. I know it's a huge difference, and I certainly sympathize with that. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you, Dave, very much.
Mr. Mayor, could I make a comment real quick?
Sure.
I'd just kind of like to elaborate on Supervisor Livermore and Supervisor Williamson's comments. In Carson City or in the state of Nevada, we're required to appraise property the way we always have. So you could have two identical houses next door to each other which have the identical assessed valuations. However, as Mrs. Williamson said, they won't have different tax amounts if like one's an owner-occupied, one's a rental property. They're going to have different tax amounts. But the assessed valuations would be the same. Like with all of these that we're talking about over in like Silver Oak, they were at one time up to $200,000 for an acre or for a one parcel. We've cut those down to $125,000. All of them in the neighborhood are down to that. And so we have to be uniform and equal as far as how we assess the property. But as far as how it's taxed now, there is that inequity.
Can I, Dave, let me ask you a question. Go ahead, Molly. Go ahead.
And Dave, you know, after speaking with you yesterday, can you just kind of point out some of the cost of that inequity? I mean, I think we looked at one property that was at $22,000 for a tax, and then some one that is pretty equal to it, and it had a $5,600 tax. I mean, this is the inequity that we're talking about right now, and the difference. So I know, you know, the one is going to be going up, and the other one is coming down at some point to become equal. But to me, I look at that and say that's quite a bit of difference. Of money being there that we're talking about when we talk about the inequity here.
That's correct. If you, like, again, Silver Oak, that's a perfect example. If you take the older section, Courtside is pretty bad. Thank you. Courtside, which was built prior to the cap, so when the values were still relatively low, it was capped. And then they built Rob Drive, Turner Court. That was all outside the cap, and so the taxes are almost double what they were in the first phases of Silver Oak. And so, yes, there's a huge inequity there. Again, the assessed valuations are the same.
I gotcha. A couple more questions, and we'll take it up, open up public comment. Can we, is the choice between, for the board, an all or nothing choice on the test, to go to the allowed rate or not, or can you go somewhere in between?
You could basically levy the tax rate whatever you want it to be.
And
right, and I'm basically speaking of that operating rate. The other rates we typically have to leave alone. I mean, we can't really tell the state that they can't have their property tax money or the school district. I'm just talking about the operating rate, that kind of that $1.79 rate. I mean, you could levy basically whatever number you want.
A bunch of lights flicking on here again. I just have one more question. We'll go take the lights. Is it theoretically possible, using the tools that we have, the tax rate tools, to blend, to equalize the commercial and real and residential rate? I mean, because right now there's a cap of 3% and a cap of 8%. I mean, if you were to say, hey, you know, there's an inequity built in there, can the tax rate change, or is that, or is it, can you equalize those by changes in the tax rate, or do you violate the uniform?
No, I don't believe you can do that. I don't think you can levy different tax rates for different types of property.
Okay. All right. I've got, hang on here a minute. Okay, who do I have?
I'm no God.
I was the last.
Just can we enact an increased rate on real property but not personal property, or vice versa, personal property and not real?
No. As far as I know, the tax rate has to be the tax rate, and it has to be equal for all types of property.
Supervisor Aldean, Dempsey.
I know you've included centrally assessed property, which I understand to be property owned by utilities, right?
Correct.
Equipment owned by utilities.
And real property as well.
Mines, net proceeds from minerals, obviously, that's not real germane. Okay, all right. Well, what percentage of that? It's a fairly small percentage of the total tax that we would realize, the tax revenue would realize, based on centrally assessed property. I mean, I know it's in the tax law, but, I mean, it's a relatively small figure,
I believe,
right?
We're estimating the increase would probably be about $100,000. I believe we'd probably get close to $1 million a year in centrally assessed.
Is that right?
Okay. Property tax.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Larry, on the email that we received yesterday with the ranges of property tax increase, I mean, just for example, the multi-residential, it went from $198 to $12,763. So what was that like if we were going to the lowest to then to the highest of what we would tax?
No, what that was if we looked at all the properties that were going to be impacted, one of the properties would be impacted by like $198 and the other property would be impacted by $12,000.
But that would be if we did the...
If you did all of that is based on the new rate.
On the new rate, which was the highest that we did. And then also, with this tax and all of this goes into the general operations.
That is correct.
Okay, and then this was one of the... When we went over the different revenue ways of which we were doing this was one of the ways that we thought of generating the revenues.
Well, this really wasn't on that list that I had prepared for you. It was a separate action, but this is basically we have not included this money in our original 2011 budget estimate. So if we did include this, it would increase our revenues.
So I guess another question I have though is, you know, we did receive that list and we'll be discussing it later this month. But I question the fact that whether or not we have exhausted all of our opportunities of generating revenues within the city. You know, because there, I guess my question is there are 11 different programs. Have we asked all the city workers of whether or not how they feel that we would be able to do this help us with generating revenues?
Molly, what we need to do is save that for a later discussion. What we really need to do today is talk about setting a tax rate, and I understand that. We're going to get into the revenue programs and those kinds of things probably on the 18th, but today's specific thing is we have to, by law, set a tax rate today so that Nick can file his budget.
I understand that, but
so
I guess...
there may be a lot of opportunities for revenues, but I don't know how to trade that off against... try to adopt a tax rate.
But that's what I want to point out, is that there may be a bunch of different opportunities, and this may be one that we don't want to venture into, and I would like for the rest of the board to know that, you know, speaking with the city workers, that there are. They've come up with different opportunities, and this may not have to be one that we resort to.
You know, and put it in perspective, though, we might come up with $2 million worth of new revenues, including this, $2 to $2.5 million. We're still $7 million short, so it's kind of a... You know, it's however you want to look at it. But what I was going to point out, if I could take the opportunity, is we did look at all the properties, and we looked at all the single family particularly, and if I look at the single most highest increase, if you were to go to the new tax rate, is $726. The majority of them are in the $240, $250 a year range. The total tax that comes with this off of residential properties is about $30,000. The majority of it comes from other areas. So from a single family standpoint, yes, it goes up. But again, it's a big number as a number goes, but a dollar value, again, we're talking $700 to $750 a year.
But then that will continue.
As the key, as the single property with the highest amount. Most of them are in the $200 to $300 range.
And then that continues to increase every year.
Yeah.
Right.
Just as all revenues do.
Right.
The lights are still going on here, so I got the, bear with us here. Supervisor, a little more than Supervisor Aldi.
Well, one of the the emails I got or information provided to me was a breakdown of the new tax component where I think in a round number we're looking about $250,000 in the hole, but I got another one that says $220,000. But when that $250,000 came to me, there was a cut of RDA having $100,000 of that, which is redevelopment money, and then the general fund receiving the $150,000. Can we implement those in different phases of, let's say, let's not increase the redevelopment money?
No.
I don't know.
We can't do that. No. Once we implement the tax rate, we just implement it.
Well, but my point is this. This might be the reason why you do this or you don't do this. I'm not sure that I've seen anything that redevelopment needs $100,000 worth of new operating money. I don't know what they would do with that. Maybe keep the ice rink open for another month. I don't know. But I just not comfortable with the division of that money going forth, generating money from people or businesses and everybody else. You know, the comments that I get up and down the street is, even though the news that we had yesterday was not pleasant regarding the layoffs of people, but Carson City hasn't learned yet to live within its means. And that's, I think, is an important issue here. And I think Supervisor Walt's comments about, you know, about raising revenue, I think there's also an element should be with that about how to reduce operating costs. And I just, you know, from my perspective here, I just can't see us increasing this tax rate to provide for at least part of that money going to part of the city's tax structure that doesn't have a need for it. And if you can't segregate it, then you know, I just can't buy it.
Supervisor Livermore, on the spreadsheet that I provided you yesterday, I did not break out redevelopment.
I don't know if I got it. I don't know if I got it from you, Dave. I got it from someplace.
Well,
yeah,
it was
split out. With the money would be $150,000 for
correct.
At that time. This is a much better number, 220.
But yeah, I believe the number. It was pretty close to 220 for the general fund, but the redevelopment authority would receive probably about $75,000 more, I believe. It goes from $1,964,458 to $2,029,760 is the original projection that we got from Al Kramer, the treasurer. So the redevelopment authority would get, you know, less than $100,000. It's probably about $75,000 more, $80,000.
I don't see any more lights up here, so. The cross-examinations. Just sit down in front, though. I mean, you're subject to recall. Hang on a minute.
May I just, Dave, one thing really quickly, because I do want to compliment you. You know, we've been bombarded with questions and what has this done, and you're always so polite and conscientious, and I certainly appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could just very quickly before people review the Board of Equalization has been meeting throughout the last month, and you had, and how many – how many appeals and what was the resolution of those?
Thank you. We had 41 appeals, and we ended up, I know Mr. Bagwell's in the officers in the audience here. He appealed his value, and we ended up lowering two subdivisions or two phases of his subdivision, about 30,000. We ended up actually lowering values about 4 million based on the appeals that went to the board. And so the board themselves were able to use sales up until January 1st of this year, which we weren't able to use. And so we've seen that the market has gone down, and we do anticipate that the values will be going down again when we send out the assessment notices this year for the 11-12 year, which we're already working on. But the board went very well. We did conclude on February 23rd, so we did great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Members of the public desire to speak to us. Yes, sir. Come on up.
Mayor, member of the board, members of the board, I'm Jim Bagwell. I live on Girard Court. I appreciate you allowing me to come and speak to you about this. along with Supervisor Livermore's comment that Carson City hasn't learned to live within its means, I somewhat concur with you. Number one, and I'd like to ask, maybe Dave can answer this with a yes or no. I don't believe that the law requires the city or any entity in the state to go to the 3% cap. Is that correct? You can levy anything underneath that.
No. The way that the taxes themselves are calculated is that they take the total, or the old method, which would be the assessed valuation times the tax rate, and then they look at what was taxed last year. If there is a 3% increase, then we have to go up to the 3%. But if the assessed valuation, the old method, is under the cap, then we tax on the actual old method, the assessed valuation times the tax rate. But yes, no, we unfortunately don't have any control over the 3 and the 8%.
Okay, for my comments, I'd like to respectfully stand in opposition to any increase in property taxes by increasing the tax rate or increase in any other taxes or fees. The people of Carson City have given you the power to do certain things. To do these, you are authorized to collect only the monies necessary to pay for the business of the people. Now, I know I sound like I'm lecturing, but this must be done in consideration with the wishes of the people and the ultimate respect for their property. Government should have no more in their treasury than the amount necessary to do the business of the people. The most dangerous power entrusted to man is that of collecting and dispersing revenues. When the economy struggles, government cannot tax it back into good health. Carson City, the state of Nevada, in the United States, we've got a great burden right now, and it won't be healed unless the private sector heals. Government must show, and they've got to be the first, to show great fiscal restraint. The money that circulates through government doesn't have the same impact that money that circulates in the private sector. At the top of the list is housing and construction. Any additional taxes on property will, out of necessity, decrease the economic activity in that area. And it'll trickle down in other areas. We've all felt the loss of home values, interest rates on money we might have deposited somewhere, if we're lucky enough to do that, and the erosion of the value of the dollar. My suggestion to you, my feeling as a resident of this city, is now's the time for Carson City to tighten its belt. I opine that every family in this city is fearful financially and trying to survive on less than they had last year. While we all have wants, now's not the time to act on it. I hope recovery is on the horizon, but that would be speculative at best. My fear is the light at the end of the tunnel is the V&T that's going to run over us. And that's all I have to say. I appreciate your time.
Hang on for the... Okay, go ahead. Yes, sir.
My name is Fred Brown. Sorry about the hat.
Hey, Fred, good seeing you.
Anyway, I know you people are aware of the business community and all the problems that they're facing. My concern about any tax increase has to do with a lot of the people who have very low incomes. They can barely make their rent. They can barely make their medicine. They can barely make food costs. Some go several days a week without eating because they do not have the money to buy food. Any tax increase that you initiate will filter down to the people who rent spaces to the individuals that live in these homes, and it just creates a greater burden on them. I would like to see you guys actually give us a tax holiday. Don't even take your 3% next year and let the community try to level out, find out what's going to happen with the economy in this next year. The whole of Northern Nevada is suffering quite badly, and they need every bit of relief that they can possibly get. I know it'll hurt the city. I know it'll hurt city employees. But in the long run, we'll all come out ahead of the game. And when it comes to election time, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be giving you pats on the back for not increasing taxes. And you might wind up with an office again next year. Okay, thank you.
Nobody hears
me. Okay.
Good morning. I'm Dan Smith, president of the Sierra Nevada Association of Realtors. Our association is opposed to staff's proposal to base the 2011 budget on a 33-cent, which equates to about 10% increase in the property tax rate at this time. The real estate industry is navigating treacherous waters right now, not the least of which is the ability to qualify and obtain credit. Any additional costs associated with the monthly mortgage payment, of which taxes are part of the equation, makes accessibility to home ownership and turning an empty, abandoned, foreclosed property into a neighbor-occupied home a larger hurdle to overcome. The reasoning put forth by staff to increase the property tax is, in fact, the exact reason Carson City residents cannot afford a property tax rate increase. Values are dropping, equity is being lost, the economy is struggling, and jobs are scarce. Raising taxes compounds this problem. This would further intensify the difficulty newly constructed homes face on the open market when competing against equally valued homes that pay lower taxes. Additionally, foreclosed homes are jumping to the 8% cap category and only resetting to the 3% cap once they become owner-occupied again. Finally, we are confused about this process. You have a proposal in front of you to base the 2011 budget on this tax increase today. The Nevada Appeal this week reported that cuts and other options will be presented to you at your next meeting. Aren't those two discussions related to each other? And how can you make a decision today about tax increases when you're not clear on the spending side of the equation? Again, on behalf of the 600 members of the Sierra Nevada Association of Realtors, we urge you to maintain the current property tax rate and not rely on increasing property taxes as the basis for your budget. Thank you.
Thank you. I think a clarification, I don't read the staff as pitching one position or another. I mean, maybe I'm missing what they're saying, but they're asking for direction. Second, I think that what's going on here, we do this drill every year because the state law requires us to either say yes or no or do what we're going to
do. I guess my only comment,
I understand exactly what you're saying, Dan. So.
Right, my only comment is that I wanted to do it early this year because last year we did it toward the end of May, and it didn't really give us, I mean, we had presented the tax rate to you and the budget with the tax rate in it, and it was, I believe it was the middle of May, and you decided not to increase it, so it kind of gave us a scramble. So we just wanted to go ahead and get direction, and you tell us what we need. Now, if we increase the tax rate, I mean, it's not going to solve all of our budget problems. Obviously, it's going to make a dent. We're $8 million in the hole, and this will probably provide about $300,000 extra money. So, I mean, there's going to be cuts. There's no question about it, no matter what you do. If you implemented every dollar in revenues we could do, we're still going to have to cut $6 million probably. So, I mean, we're going to, I mean, if you wish the city to tighten its belt, you're going to get your wish because there's no question that we're going to have to reduce expenses no matter what we do. And it's going to probably affect public safety, and it's going to affect everything that we do is going to get cut. I mean, we're talking $8 million on a $55 million budget. So, I mean, if the citizens are wanting us to cut and to live within our means, they're going to get their wish because we just don't have, there's no way we could raise that much revenue. So,
can't print money. Okay, Supervisor Williamson has a question.
I have a question, and I would say we have been continually cutting for the last 5 years, and we have continued to live within our means. It's just been this precipitous sales tax drop that's just, you know, overwhelmed us. But I would ask, like to ask Mr. Smith to give it, if possible, and this is, I know, unexpected and off the cuff, but how are things going in the real estate market? Are people, you mentioned credit, are there things that perhaps this board could do to try to encourage lenders, or are homes being purchased? How's it going?
Yes, homes are being purchased. We're seeing an increase in the number of real estate transactions. However, the value of the individual real estate transactions is dropped significantly. And the largest slice of the pie is in the under $200,000, actually even under $150,000. That's represented in 2009, if I remember correctly, about 63% of the transactions versus only about 35 in 08. So, you know, the property values have dropped significantly. Those homes are being sold under the $150,000 range. A large percentage are first-time home buyers taking advantage of the government's first-time home buyer tax credit. The banks have all tightened their lending ratios, and so there's an increase in taxes, even a little bit, will have an effect on those folks that can qualify to buy their first home.
And how about commercial?
Well, I'm residential, so I can't speak to commercial. My partner Brad had to leave. He had an appointment in Reno, but commercial is has significant hurdles to clear in the near future.
Thank you very much. Good question. Mr. Turner, good morning. Thanks for building a couple houses.
Hey, we're giving it our best shot out there right now. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and supervisors. We're here to basically echo the sentiments of the other people that have already testified today. We stand in opposition to the tax increase. I'm going to go out and make a statement here that Carson City real estate values for residential are at their lowest point right now during this recession. There's a specific example that I want to cite in Silver Oak right now. There's a lot that was sold 2.5 years ago for $200,000. It was a cash transaction. It's now on the market listed with a REMAX agent for $95,000. So that's a 60% decrease in value in 2.5 years, and that's unprecedented and, in my opinion, catastrophic in terms of decline in asset value for Carson City. My business partner, I'm sure you know Mr. Richards, has been in the real estate business here in Carson City for a long time, and he comments regularly that he's never seen a retraction in values on this scope. So I hope we're done with that sort of retraction, but I just can't say for sure. I think things could actually decline even further. Where we are right now is, as far as land values are concerned, is where we were in the mid to late 90s. And we completely wiped out anything that happened in the earlier part of this decade. That's all gone. So this is a transaction that is yet to take place, but if it's listed at $95,000, you can be sure that no one's going to pay more for that, and in all likelihood it'll be paid less. And so I don't know that transactions of this nature have actually filtered into to Dave's information matrix yet, which they use for developing tax rates for the future. So I think that we really have to exercise restraint on raising tax rates on properties that are still slipping in value. And I mean, I really hope that this is it, but we have no way of knowing whether further slides are in store for us. One other comment that I'd like to make in terms of belt tightening is that recently this board made cuts to the Carson City Building Department, and staffing levels there are as low as I can remember. But in spite of those cuts, the service at the department right now is as good as has been in recent memory. So, you know, Kevin Gaddis and his staff are to be commended for taking these lemons and making lemonade out of it. I've purchased 4 permits in the last 8 weeks, and I've got 4 more sets of plans to go in. You know, the cut in the water and sewer hookup fees has made a big difference, along with the stimulus that's been provided by the buyer tax credit. So we're hustling to get these plans in the city, get them out, and get them built so these people are eligible for their tax increases. And that department has been performing very well. So I'd like to use that as an example of what can be done in other departments around the city when big cuts are imposed upon those departments. Things can be made to work. We've been doing it in the private sector for 4 years, and now it seems more the norm than the exception. You know, things that we have to do on a daily basis in our business, which 4 years ago I would have thought to be unthinkable and unbelievable, are now commonplace for us, and we're always looking for ways to cut even further. So with that, I'm going to conclude my comments. I'll take any questions that the board may have, but we do stand in opposition to any change in that tax rate at this time.
Thanks. Any questions, Mark? Thanks.
Thank you.
But Mark, I'd like to thank you for the comments on the building department. That's good to hear that.
So. Good.
Okay. Other members of the public? Mr. Wagner?
Oh, he's tall. Name is still John Wagner, same as it was before. I haven't changed any. As far as the tax is concerned, it doesn't affect me at all from what I can gather. But I just don't believe in saying, okay, since it doesn't affect me, it affects the other guy, so what? I don't believe in that kind of philosophy. I don't smoke. Yet they raise tobacco taxes all the time. And I don't believe in taxing any more the smoker than I do anybody else. It's always the philosophy, as long as the other guy is paying. I believe, and I'm not, again, a lawyer, and I'm not a bean counter. My daughter does that with her MBA. I do believe that the Supreme Court has ruled, I don't know whether it was 2006 or 1990, the tax rate has got to be uniform. And it looks like if they're going to be raising the, you know, playing around with the tax rate, it's no longer uniform. That's my personal opinion. I don't believe in taxing other people just because, well, they can afford it or they can't afford it, or it doesn't affect me any. Thank you.
Thanks, John. And I think, your comments, because I see you have the United States Constitution in your pocket there, I think that the uniform and equal comes out of the Nevada State Constitution. So I was thinking to myself, you know, it's not a bad idea to carry not only the United States Constitution but the Nevada Constitution around. So.
Well, I thought about that, but it's too big, I think, compared to this.
Okay.
Thank you. I know it wasn't. Just had nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution. That's why I didn't cite it.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Other members of the public desire to weigh in on this issue? Builders Association.
Mr. DeBar.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Supervisors. For the record, my name is Rick DeBar. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Builders Association of Western Nevada, representing 650 companies in the construction industry. Rob and I appreciate your pointing out that your previous actions will be the catalyst for construction jobs in our community. That's good news. I want to be part of the selection process for the contractors, so, yeah. The other one, John keeps referring to, I think, a sentiment that's fairly pervasive through the country right now, is we're kind of unhappy with government and the course it's taking with regards to our individual lives. But certainly another topic for discussion. The one angle or aspect of this that I don't think we've touched on today is the individual homeowners that are watching their property values decline, expect to see their property tax decline by the assessed value. My home, I would love for my property taxes to go down. But as soon as I hear that the governing body is going to say, well, yeah, don't spend that money yet, Rick, because we're going to raise your taxes so that you really don't see the decrease in your bill. I think that would not sell well, particularly to those of us that are impacted by this economic condition. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
What do you think about the tax cap then?
Oh, it was ludicrous. Bad idea.
So bad you would idea. Be in favor of removing the cap?
Of course.
I'd ask you to think about that one. But we'll save that one for another day, probably offline. Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. Okay. All right. further members of the public desire to speak to this issue? Hearing none. Okay. Looks like we've discussed for pretty good, but good discussion on tax and issues like that. What's the board desire of the board? Do we want to take this up? Do we want to pass it on? Supervisor Aldean first here.
Hang on. Clarifying question. The regional juvenile facility, now, if we were not to levy this additional tax, that would further limit our access to those facilities?
Probably not. We'd still have to pay. We would just have to take it from something else.
Okay.
Well, it would be in the same fund. It would be just a different source of money.
Okay.
So it would be from.
But there's nothing legislatively that requires that we contribute. As I recall, it is directly related to use of the facility, or is it not?
No, there's a contract, and if we, and by that, I think you buy a certain amount of use, but that's been said in the contract, and we'll probably have discussions with the counties over the next year to find out if our relationship and the use of that facility still warrants the amount that we pay. To do that, we have to know in January whether or not we're going to make that kind of a decision. And so we had a meeting yesterday with the probation department to find out how our usage of that facility is there. And everybody's agreed to kind of leave it alone now because we're seeing how things are going. We may make some changes within our own organization that may then reduce our reliance on that organization. But we need to make sure that we're not kind of cutting off our nose to spite our face kind of things.
Larry, has the usage of the facility increased over the years, or has it diminished?
Actually, it's diminished.
Okay.
From what we're understanding is that, you know, more of us are doing, and when I say yes, I'm talking about the other counties, are probably doing more programs earlier into the process and then trying to divert folks that would have to go to WNRIC. But we don't know how that is. That may be cyclical, and we need to understand how that is, too. And that also hinges on the ability for us then to fund our people. So it gets to be kind of a catch-22 because what we're looking at is we may have to reduce our funding that goes to WNRIC to support the programs that our own department has in juvenile probation that then diverts people that would have to go to WNRIC. So we're trying to balance all that out to make sure we really understand what the unintended consequences are if we make a change in our funding for WNRIC. So.
And I, in response to Supervisor Williamson's question about commercial is not faring well. Obviously, we know how many vacancies we have in Carson City at the moment, and almost every one of our leases has been renegotiated. We've had to reduce rents, and an increase in property taxes, I think, is going to have a chilling effect on the commercial sector as well, because if the tenant isn't able to pay those in the form of additional rents, then the landlord is going to have to absorb those additional costs, which is going to, in some cases, place them in a financial jeopardy. So in response to your question, it's pretty dire.
Well, it seems like the board wants to make, you probably expressed where the board wants to go. Do you want to make a motion to not go with the allowed rate, or what does the board want to do? Pete? Okay. Supervisor Livermore?
Mr. Mayor, I move to direct staff to develop the 2011 budget with the current tax rate and not use the new allowed rate as presented today.
Motion by Supervisor Livermore, second by Supervisor Walt. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Okay, good discussion. Thanks, public, for discussion. The next round, we'll be talking about services, and so please keep in mind what everybody said. When it gets down to tightening belts, everybody's going to come in and say, we want this service, we want that service. Please bear with us because these are not easy times. Thanks. Okay.
Wait, we're not adjourned yet. Hey, Rick, you look good today.
Okay, we're now on non-action items. Hang on, everybody. We'll be outside here in a minute, so let's just kind of calm down for a second. Non-action items, internal communications, administrative matters, anything?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I just want to, forewarn the board about the next meeting. It looks like it'll be a marathon board meeting on the 18th. We'll probably have our regular items on the in the morning session, probably go into the afternoon session to talk about budget somewhere between 2 to 5 in that neighborhood. Then that evening we have the community support grant folks, so it's going to be a long, long day. So
big consent agenda.
And I just ask that if you could review the agenda ahead of time and call our office with any questions, because we are going to be short-staffed and someone will be filling in who mostly does criminal law. So I would appreciate any questions. We have people out, and for various reasons, that you try as best you can. I know the issues will come up. She is a very seasoned attorney. However, I would like to field as many questions as I can.
Okay. Let me just, you know, it is going to be a long day. I mean, you know, and part of me says let's do a long day. I guess the other part of what I'd like the board to weigh in with here a little bit is, you know, these are going to be some difficult decisions we'll be making and talking about, and I don't want people to be getting tired and thinking, you know, because frustration levels can crank up pretty hard. So, you know, if we do this,
Protein.
We'll bring protein bars in.
You know, I understand this, Mayor.
All right. Well, bear with us then. Supervisor Aldine, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in light of that, do you want to try to split the meeting up? Do you want to try to go 2 days, maybe a Wednesday, Thursday, or Thursday, Friday, or something like that? Or, you know, we could look at that and see if it would make, and then maybe hold a special session for the budget out ahead of the board meeting. The concern I have about doing it any later than that, if we get too far down, then we have got to come up with some of these answers for a balanced budget. That's the problem, and we've got to get that submitted. So we're getting crunched on the time, right? We've got time, but
Well, let me ask you like this. Maybe, and I haven't seen what's on the agenda yet, but is it possible to put the budget in the morning and the agenda in the afternoon? I mean, reverse so that we have, you know, kind of a good discussion in the morning and then, you know, try and take some of the easier agenda items in the afternoon?
No problem with that. The only thing we've kind of set is the evening discussion with the folks to come in and do the presentation on the community support grants. That's fixed. Other than that, it's kind of a wide open. We can certainly
All right.
Do that.
Well, if that's okay with the board, I think it's a better idea. Thought. Okay, let's try it like that. Anything else? Supervisor Aldine.
On a positive note, I wanted to distribute copies of the small business permit process overview, which was developed, and I want to echo the comments that were made earlier about the building department. Kevin Gaddis has taken the lead on this in cooperation with representatives from the community and the Chamber of Commerce to help people navigate through the system, the permitting system. So I want to distribute copies of the information that is now available on the website. If you want to visit the website and review the material, I'm sure that Kevin and the rest of us would appreciate your input.
Just a comment to those lucky 800 people that have tickets next Tuesday, March 9th at the Carson Nugget. Greg Mortensen, the author of Three Cups of Tea and Stones into Schools, is going to be making a presentation as part of the Big Read or Carson City Read Project. And I've been attending every Tuesday night at the library at 6:30. There's been presentations about mountaineering and Pakistan and Afghanistan and K2, and that will go on after March 9th and March 16th and 23rd. There will also be presentations. So enjoy the fact that we're having perhaps a potential Nobel Peace Prize winner come and visit our city and read the book and enjoy this literary opportunity.
Very good. Anything else? Okay. Move to adjourn. Just move second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Adjourned. Yep.